KPOE 1400 AM and 96.9 FM present The Talk of Emporia, bringing you local issues, topics, and events of the day.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk of Emporia, 14 KVOE, 96.9 FM, and KVOE.com. Chuck Samples, your host here today, as our program is brought to you by Newman Regional Health, offering more medical specialties and convenience than ever, Newman Regional Health, and by Bobby D's Merchant Street Barbecue. Enjoy dining inside or the convenience of carryout. Regardless, Bobby D's Merchant Street Barbecue, 607 Merchant, where it is all about to meet. We've talked about this already this week on the KVOE Morning Show, how this is one of our favorite programs of the year, and we are just about set to launch. The National Teachers Hall of Fame induction ceremonies are officially underway here in Emporia, and we are pleased to have this year's inductees class in full with us here this morning. Rebecca Hamilton, Riviera Beach, Florida. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, Chuck. Thank you.
Good. Eric Hook, Miami, Florida. Good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. Doing great. Happy to be here.
Outstanding. Glad to have you in. Karen Long, Montverde, Florida. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Good. Good, good. Kristen Record, Stratford, Connecticut. Good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. Thrilled to be here.
Great. Glad to have you in. And Monica Washington, Texarkana, Texas. Good morning.
Good morning, Chuck. Thank you so much for having us.
Glad to have you. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you.
Good. Glad to have you in. Well, I have to ask, and I'm going to bounce questions around the table here, really the reaction to the induction announcements here just really a couple of months ago. Eric, I'm going to start with you on this. What was your reaction when you learned that you were inducted into the National Teachers Hall of Fame?
It was a humbling experience. Our school called a faculty meeting, and the teacher that actually inducted me or told me that I was going to be inducted was a past Hall of Fame member. So he was class of 1999. And it was amazing. They had teachers there, and actually they got my family to come in and students. So they acted like it was just a regular faculty meeting. And then all of a sudden, Joe showed up and he says, "Well, we have something special to discuss." And they said, "Emporia, Kansas." And then I go, "Oh, my God, it's happening. It's happening." And kids came out with balloons and a big banner. And it was overwhelming, but a beautiful moment that I will never forget. It was just...
Definitely.
Yes, yeah. It's very, very special. And I'm so happy that my students were there. I teach... at Miami Senior High School, and my whole career has been there 34 years. I just finished my 35th. And a lot of my colleagues were my students.
That's special.
So they were like cheering me on, and I was like, wow. So it was a very special
What is that moment. Like to have your colleagues as your, really some of the people that were under your tutelage?
Incredible. And actually, I have to tell you, I learned so much from them. I mean, you think, oh, I'm the boss and I know what to do. And they have learned so much. I mean, I've been doing this for such a long time, but they are so new at it. They know more than I do, especially technology-wise and stuff like that. And they see things in a different perspective. Yeah. So I think we always say that we are life learners. Well, it is so true in a school where they are. And they are amazing. And I feel like I knew them as students first. And now they're like my friends. And believe it or not, I've taught their children's too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've had mommy, daddy, and now their kids. So it tells me that I'm old. I'm seasoned.
Karen, you were nodding and giving your approval right up to that last answer. What was it like for you, and what was your reaction to being inducted?
Overwhelming, humbling, everything that Eric said, really. We have assemblies once or twice a month with our entire upper school. I teach at an independent school in Florida. And I had, actually, my youngest son was the one that nominated me. And he had just had his wisdom teeth taken out just a few weeks before, and it was time for his follow-up appointment. So I had called my dean and said, "I need to take him for a follow-up. I'll be back at school around 11 o'clock. Well, the assembly was 11:30, and I got a really terse email saying, you know, well, we have some pictures that are going to be taken. The sports group is going to be there.
We need you there,
in other words. You know, we need to be professional, and you need to be there. And this was a response that I normally did not get from the dean. And so I was like, okay, I'll be there. And walking down to the gym that day, the person that actually made the announcement was a former Hall of Famer from Florida, and she was right behind me. I didn't recognize her. I just thought maybe she might be a parent. And again, the same dean made this big deal about, well, thanks for coming to Montverde to award the McDonald's Player of the Year for our basketball group. And she wasn't from McDonald's. But I did not know that. Made it down, and then he introduced her. And just like Eric, she mentioned Emporia, and immediately I burst into tears. I mean, it was the most overwhelming feeling I could ever experience, besides the birth of my kids. I immediately looked up into the stands, and my son was smiling really big. He had known about it for weeks. And then I looked to the side and noticed my 87-year-old mother and my sister were to the side. I didn't know they were there, but I found out they were there. And then from behind me, my oldest son, who had graduated from the school the year prior, he showed up, and I just absolutely lost every bit of faculty that I had. It was so amazing. And to know that, gosh, we're 155,
yeah.
Now out of, Ken shared with us, 3.5 million teachers. That's something that is really a humbling experience to have. So
indeed. Wow, that's amazing. Becky, how about you? What does it mean for you to be inducted, and how did you find out about your specific induction?
I think our stories are very similar, Karen, because I just shared this story earlier with some of the other people here, so I won't go into a detail again, but it was at a faculty meeting that I had intended to miss because I had a doctor's appointment, right? And they convinced me to stay till at least 3, and then I also had a prior inductee, who's now a member, introduced me, and it was exciting, and I feel very lucky because there are so many teachers who I know are just as good as I am, and they will never get this kind of recognition. So that makes me feel very lucky that I had my faculty nominate me, and when they announced it, they said, would you like to say something? And I said, thank you for nominating me. And then I couldn't speak anymore. That was it, yes.
What was it like to kind of look at really who had showed up on your behalf to say, wow, you know, congratulations basically for a job well done at the highest level?
Right, yes. We have such a great faculty. My son was there, though, my younger son. The older son lives in Jacksonville, which is, you know, pretty far away from Jupiter. And a close friend of mine was there, and Dr. Murray, who introduced me to the faculty as an inductee. She and I were pretty close when she was there. She's retired now. And some other people came on campus, a prior teacher. His name's Randy Oddy. He showed up, and I didn't question why he was there because now he works for CTA, which is our union, and he's on campus often to help people get out of trouble. And so I didn't think anything of that either. But when my son walked out with the cake, that's when I knew, you know, why is Wyatt at a faculty meeting? Because he has been a coach for us. He has
really
coached our girls volleyball, yes, just as a side thing. But still, he would not come to a faculty meeting. So that's when the light bulb went off. It took a little while, but yeah.
Gotcha.
But it was nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Kristen, how about you? What's your reaction, and when did your light bulb go off for your induction announcement?
My initial reaction was just being so overwhelmed and just so feeling so blessed because, as Becky said, there's so many outstanding educators that I work with every day in my building, in my district, in my state, all mm-hmm. over the country. And to really process that, you know, I'm one of five people, not one of five people in my district or even in my state, but one of five people nationwide to get this honor. It's a lot of responsibility, too, to know mm-hmm. that I'm one example of the amazing things that go on in K-12 education every single day. And so to be called out for that recognition is just a tremendous honor. I said at the time, like, I couldn't imagine a bigger honor than this. But there's also so much responsibility that goes along with it because, you know, the five of us, we represent all that's good about K-12 education. And there's so many other people, as Becky said, that won't get this platform and won't get the same recognition. So I'm incredibly lucky to be one of those people and to share this with the other four teachers that are here. My own story, I was the first of the five of us to get the announcement made. And so when you get to a certain point in this process, basically the Hall of Fame just says to you, thanks so much. And if you're selected, there will be a surprise announcement in your community sometime. So, you know, and that happens in the end of January. So at some point, you just have to go on with your life and, you know, pretend that none of the application and the videos and all of this other extensive process, you got to pretend that it didn't happen. So it's a Thursday, and unbeknownst to me, I teach in Stratford, Connecticut. I'm a high school physics teacher. Unbeknownst to me, the night before, all of my students except for my AP Mechanics class, got an email inviting them to a special presentation at a particular time in the library. Didn't know that this happened. So they had also, my school, in conjunction with the Hall of Fame, had invited my parents, both of whom are retired public school educators. My dad taught over 40 years, my mom over 30 years. My younger brother is also a public school teacher. He, his wife, and my niece were also invited to the school. So my niece got a day off from high school. And I had several amazing teacher colleagues from not only around the state, I'm a 2011 Connecticut Teacher of the Year. Several other Connecticut Teachers of the Year were invited to my school. A really good friend of mine from New Jersey, a State Teacher of the Year from New Jersey, drove up from New Jersey up to my school for Connecticut. In Connecticut for the announcement, they got every single member of my science department into the library, all of my school buildings, administration. And so this was happening a little after 9 o'clock. Now, I had no idea that any of this was going on. So I get to school, and my prep period is first block every day. We have an AB schedule, but it's still first block. And so I make really good use of my prep time because I teach three different advanced placement physics classes, and there's two physics teachers, so we share lab space. So my prep time is really important to me, and I make good use of it once I get my coffee. My department head starts acting really, really strange about, like, where was I going and what was I doing? And, oh, did you need to pay? Oh, I'll make copies for you. I'm like, she never volunteers to make copies for me. What is going on? Like, so I'm like, you know, and so there was this whole big thing. And I just, all of my interactions with her, because we've been teaching colleagues and friends for, you know, 8 or 9 years. And in my brain, I'm like, why is she acting? So she's following me wherever I go. And, like, it was just, at one point, she physically took papers out of my hand. And was like, no, go back to your room and, you know, could you go check on so-and-so's class? Like, I'm a little worried about what's going on in their classroom. I'm like, there's something wrong in their classroom. What are you talking about? So I was getting super irritated, and she went and she made copies. And then she came back, and they were the wrong thing. And I was like, I know you're trying to be helpful. I don't understand why. Like, could you please just let me, like, I need to go do stuff. And it, and then I'm having this awkward conversation with her. I'm like, what is wrong with you this morning? And one of my students walks in and I'm like across, like at my desk, and she's sort of in the middle of the room, and the student walks in behind us, sort of like gathers that he's like interrupting something, and says, Miss, I just want to check in. I'm not going to be able to be at that presentation this afternoon, like later on. I want to know like what I'm going to miss. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, well, he's like, I got to go to that thing in the library, but I have a college, interview. she goes, what am I going to miss? And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about in the library. Is the point of this conversation that you want classwork that you're going to miss for my class? And as I'm saying this, my department head whips around and basically body blocks my vision from me to the student. And I can only imagine now in retrospect what was on her face and what she must have mouthed at this poor 17-year-old kid. But she literally says, if you college interviews go through the guidance office, go to the guidance secretary. And she like gestures and points like out the door, basically like banishing him from the room. And my jaw is on the floor because she's like, my department is usually so mild mannered about things. So this poor kid's like, okay, sorry, miss. Like, I didn't mean to interrupt. And he like slinks out of my classroom. And she turns around and she's like, so do you have all the coffee you need? And I'm like, what is wrong with you? What did you just do? And so it's just like, why don't you come into my office and sit? I'm like, no, I don't want to sit in your office and have tea. I drink coffee. I have coffee. I'm fine. Like, just leave me alone. And I was all aggravated. And then so I'm trying to get work done. And I get up to like go to the lab room, which is across the hallway. And she, where are you going? I'm like, I'm going to prep my lab. Like, what is, so this whole thing for 90 minutes goes on. Finally, the bell rings. I'm like, okay, kids are coming. I need to get it together. I can't act irritated in front of my students. I have no idea what's going, like, what? I was like, I gotta let it go. Okay, present for kids. So I'm at my door and I'm like greeting my kids and they're all coming into the class completely like normal. So I'm like, oh, thank God, this could be back to normal. Great. Well, they were coming to class like complete normal because they didn't get one of the emails. So I didn't know this at the time, remember. So I'm in class and we're all having a normal beginning of class conversation, and I'm teaching, and I'm mid-sentence about, you know, asking a question about on it. It was about torque and angular momentum, and knock, knock, knock at the door, right? And they're like, and I usually, if all my kids are there and I'm not expecting someone, my usual thing in my classroom is friend or foe, like whether or not we open up the door or who gets to open up the door to my classroom. And they're like, it's Dr. Graff. That was the principal. I'm like, friend, let her in. So she comes in, and I was like, all right, so what did Dr. Graff just demonstrate? And she's like, you know, she goes like, rolls her eyes. She's like, this is why I don't like coming into your classroom, because I always get thrown into a physics lesson. And so, and then she like, you know, waves at me. She's like, Ms. Regard, I need to talk to you out in the hallway. Now, this also isn't an odd thing because I'm the vice president of my teachers union. Every once in a while, when there's an emergency with a teacher, I get called to deal with a situation. So she pulls me out into the hallway, explains how there's a situation with a teacher. It could be something related to DCF. We need to, like, get you down to the office so that you can sit with the teacher. She had one of the security guards there to escort my class down to the library. Now, this is where I'm sitting here going, that's weird. That's normal. Like, usually if there's a teacher's union issue that I need to exit myself from my teaching, typically the head secretary would call me and someone would come and have coverage in my room, and they'd give me 10 or 15 minutes to get together something for my class. But this was like, no, you're coming now. So I go back in. I tell my kids, I'm really sorry, but you're going to have to go with Ed down to the library. I have a teacher's union issue I have to take care of. So they pack up all their stuff. They follow the security guard all the way down the science wing. I pivot to go in the opposite direction, which is towards the main office. Principal puts her arms around, why don't we follow your class this way? That'll give me some time to read you in on the situation. Now I feel really bad for her in retrospect because she had to walk me from my classroom all the way down to the library, which is the complete opposite end of the school, making up a story as to why I needed to be pulled out emergently, you know, out of my AP class a week and a half before AP exams and why it was so important that this has to happen now. So we get to another hallway intersection and I pivot to go left to the main office and she's like, oh wait, I just have to go see Luz Petrino has COVID. I got to go make sure that there's coverage in his class. So I can now see down the hallway that my kids, there's two security officers, the school resource officer, and my kids are being ushered into the library. The teacher in question, his classroom is next to the library. So she's still walking me down to the library. His door to his classroom is shut. She's like, oh, we'll go in through the library. We get up to the library, and she says something to the security officer. I don't know, there was some kind of exchange. It must have been a code word or something, because then she opens the door and literally shoves me into the library. And at that point, I saw David Basso, who is an inductee into the Hall of Fame, Connecticut Teacher of the Year, standing there. And every single one of my students, my family, the entire science department somehow got from the science wing down to the library without me noticing that anyone was what. And now I understood why my department head was basically policing me in a 20-foot radius of my classroom, because the copy room and the main office and all the other places that I would normally go would be the same path for the superintendent to take, for my family to take, for the members of the Board of Education. So everyone that was important in my school community and immediately important to me was there, and I burst into tears like everybody else said. And but the kicker to the whole thing was that this all was supposed to have happened on Wednesday, and today was a Thursday that this happened. Well, they had planned this whole thing out. And then about a week before, the head secretary realized that I was chaperoning a field trip on Wednesday and I wasn't going to be in school. And they actually went through the process of thinking, can I tell her that she can't chaperone the field trip? And then they went through all of the reasons basically why I would argue with them about, what do you mean I can't chaperone the field trip, and on and on and on. And so they moved the entire thing from Wednesday to Thursday with about 4 days' notice. So then they had a whole pile of people who were supposed to have been there that couldn't make the Thursday announcement on a Zoom meeting. So while I was there, I got to see everybody on Zoom. And it was just amazing. Like Eric said, there's teachers on my faculty that were my own students many years ago. This is my 23rd year teaching, so I haven't yet had children of former students, but I have multiple all over my district. I have former students that are teachers, and actually I'm really proud of the fact that this year one of my former students is the district teacher of the year. So that's just like such a cool thing, for her to have that and to be like, oh, you were my kid, and now she's the district teacher of the year, and I'm so proud of that. But it's just one more, example, like I said at the beginning, about how we just, we are here representing so many other great educators.
Absolutely. Wow. That is, I don't think we've ever had a story, with all the surprise inductions that I've covered here for about 20 years, we've never had one that turned out to be that convoluted.
It was incredibly, I don't know how they did it. It was incredibly convoluted. And later on in the day, my department head comes back to me. She goes, why do you have to be so difficult? It was just so funny. I was like, Tamita, these like I was just doing the normal things that I do every single morning. And she said, I know that. She said, but I never realized how difficult you were.
Oh, that is so crazy. Great.
But that's, I mean, crazy. So wonderful. And they had such a hard time keeping me in the dark, but they did such a good job of it. And that part was super special to me. They kept it. I mean, even that poor kid that walked into that conversation. And later on, when I was telling the story to my classes, they were all like, oh my God, he almost ruined it. But, So debriefing with my students after the fact was so much fun. That part was super fun.
That's cool. Again, Kristen Record here of Stratford, Connecticut. Also, Karen Long of Montverde, Florida. Eric Hook of Miami, Florida. Rebecca Hamilton of Riviera Beach, Florida. And now we turn to Monica Washington, Texarkana, Texas. These are our inductees into the 2023 class of the National Teachers Hall of Fame joining us. Monica, before we take our first break, what does this mean for you to be inducted, and how did you find out?
Oh, my gosh. So ditto to so many things that have been said before about how incredibly honored I am to be in this position. And do want to also say that we know that we are not the best teachers in the universe, but that we are representing the best. And so that's very important for me to say. For me, my role is a little bit different now. So after spending my 20 years with students, I moved into an instructional coach role. And so that role is a little bit different because I'm not coaching in one school, so not in my same school, but all over the country. So as Kristen said, we're both Teachers of the Year for our state. So I'm Texas Teacher of the Year. So I coach in different schools around Texas, different schools all over. So they had to figure out how to get me there that day because they didn't know where, what school I would be in or if I would be working virtually. We actually have a Hall of Fame for our district. And so they have followed all of the coaching, the keynoting, the workshops that I've done since actually being just my own classroom. And someone called from the district and said, you know, we're so incredibly proud of the work that you've done. And we've been watching and we want to invite you over to show you just how proud we are of the things that you're doing. So I had someone say, oh, you're going to be Tiger Hall of Fame, because it's like that's what ours is called, Tiger Hall of Fame. And so she said, you know, if I were you, I would get my hair done and I would wear something that I want to be seen photographed in. And I was like, okay, I will. So maybe it is Tiger Hall of Fame. So then she said, give me a list of the people you would want to be here, even if they're far, far away. We're just going to send them an honorary invitation to this celebration of Monica. And so I invited my mom and my sister, and that was pretty much it. And so she said, we'll reach out to students. We want to get you back on campus on this day. So will you be traveling? No, I'll be there. But on that day, I was working with teachers, and we were running over. And so that was priority for me. So I was late. so I'm like flying down the highway with my mom and my sister who came in from Memphis. I'm from Memphis, and that's where my career started in 1998. But we got there, but I could tell that people were very nervous that I wasn't going to make it. Dr. Ralph Draper, who is the incoming director for the Hall of Fame, executive director, was there. Hadn't met him before, so I didn't know who he was, but he was just a gentleman standing to the side. And there were all of my colleagues that I've taught with over the years, many of my students who now are teachers, and my friend who is Montana Teacher of the Year for our year, which is 2014, had made it. She flew from Montana to Dallas, drove 2 hours, and walked into the building. And then I was like, this is bigger than I thought it was. And so I thought, you know, I speak all the time, and I'm going to get up here and say my little thing, and I'll be fine. But I locked eyes with the student who I didn't know was now teaching in the district, and then that was it for me. So, yeah, they made me think it was Tiger Hall of Fame. But it was a few steps above that. So, yeah, I'm honored and do see this as a role and a responsibility that, you know, from that announcement and even before that announcement, I've always tried to enact in the work that I do, just representing the profession as best I can. So, yeah.
Now, a lot of you guys have made that point about essentially being ambassadors mm-hmm. for education. And what I want to do is I want to take our first break. I actually want to loop into another question first, but I do want to bring that topic up because this seems to be not only a focal point for the Hall of Fame as a whole, specifically the last 5 to 7 years, but it seems like something that you guys take very seriously in your day-to-day roles as educators. So our first break right now on Talk of Emporia with the National Teachers Hall of Fame class of 2023. Talk of Emporia today brought to you by Newman Regional Health. Quality healthcare close to home. That's Newman Regional Health.
Newman Regional Health Medical Partners Express Care has expanded hours, providing more opportunities for patients to get health care when they need it. Express Care is open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. weekdays, Monday through Friday, and 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturdays and Sundays.
You can find Express Care at the southwest corner of the hospital next to the emergency room. For more information, visit newmanrh.org/express or find them on Google.
Garage sale listings on the air and on the web.
It's so convenient.
At garage sale prices.
And it's just wherever you need it.
Log on to KVOE.com for details. You're listening to the Talk of Emporia. Your questions are welcome. Call the KVOE Sutherland Studio Line, 620-342-5863. That's 342-KVOE.
1134 on KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, and KVOE.com. It's our annual interview with the National Teachers Hall of Fame incoming class. And don't forget that the inductees are going to be busy rest of the day today. A lot of things on the plate for tomorrow, including the Emporia Municipal Band Concert, which will wrap up the night, and then all the induction activities, which will be taking place Friday. So we'll continue to keep you updated here on KVOE and KVOE.com. In case you missed it earlier, our inductees this year, Monica Washington of Texarkana, Texas, Kristen Record of Stratford, Connecticut, Karen Long of Montverde, Florida, Eric Hook of Miami, Florida, and Rebecca Hamilton of Riviera Beach, Florida. All right, Monica, I'm going to start with you this time around.
Okay.
And we'll work our, bounce our way around the table here a little bit as this answer goes. But what led you to be a teacher?
Ooh, so I'll have to give credit to my mom, who is not an educator, who said that she never wanted to be because she didn't think she had the patience. But she is one of the reasons that I am a teacher, because as a little person of 3 years old, 4 years old, she made me love to read. And she would take me to the bookstore or the library. And I remember loving the smell of walking in there. And it's like, oh, books. And we had a ritual of getting a donut from Krispy Kreme. And we waited for the hot sign to come on. We would get our book, get a donut, and go to the park and read. And I wanted to have other people love reading the way that I did. And so I would go back home and teach my teddy bears. And then I graduated to the kids in the neighborhood who now, when I look back, didn't want to hear my lessons on the porch with the extra worksheets that I got from the teacher. But I truly credit my mom for making me love learning and to make me know that it was okay to ask questions. I think sometimes we, you know, as we look at little people and they ask, we're like, we shush them a lot. And my mom didn't shush me. And so that was a very important part of my classroom, is that we're not shushing anyone. You know, all questions are good questions. There are no bad answers. There are no dumb questions. And so some of those things that I was learning, you know, as a preschooler, as a kindergartner, still are the lessons that stay with me today and that are the through line through my education as I support students, as I support teachers, as I support principals, just asking good questions. And so I have to give it to my mom, you know, and my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Elian, made everybody feel like that. I thought I was the favorite student. looking back now, she just had a really great knack of having everyone feel like the favorite. And so that's what I've always tried to do. Every class has thought they're my favorite class. Every student thinks they're my favorite. And they are. And I think that's the thing that has stuck with me. So definitely my mom and then my teacher, who made me feel what I try to make students feel.
Outstanding. Yeah. Becky, how about you? What was it that said, you know, I can be a teacher? And what was maybe your aha moment that kind of led you saying, this is what I'm really meant to do?
Well, it's funny you called on me second, because I'm also an English teacher, mm-hmm. as Monica is. And I wanted to be an English teacher because of my mm-hmm. love of literature, just as Monica said. Mm-hmm. My parents didn't read to me. I don't know. I always thought that the stork found the wrong house when I got dropped off, because mm-hmm. I was the first person to go to school beyond high school. Others followed after me, but no one had gone to college before I did. And my father was flabbergasted that I wanted to go. He wanted me to be a flight attendant. I said, Dad, I don't even like flying, so why would I want to be a glorified waitress in the sky? Because we didn't have men then, right? There were no male flight attendants. So I went to college, though. He, you know, filled out the paperwork and everything for me, and I went to college. undecided because he absolutely did not want me to be a teacher. He believed those who can do, those who can't teach. And I always came back with, well, those people who do wouldn't be able to do without a teacher. So, you know, it's got to start somewhere. And so I went into college my freshman year undecided. By the middle of, at the end of the first semester, I said, I have to be a teacher. I can't not be a teacher. And I told my father, I said, Dad, this is what I'm meant to do. You know, I can't pinpoint an aha moment except that moment when I made that decision and told my father, you know, he wasn't paying for school, so I could do what I want, basically, right? So I told him, I said, this is what I have to do. And the very wonderful thing is, much later in his life, he became a teacher too, and he understood. So, yeah, I just finished my 40th year of teaching.
My goodness.
And I promised myself if I ever stopped loving it, I would quit, because there are so many unhappy teachers. They need to go away. But I've always loved it. And so I'm very glad I rebelled against my father.
That's one. Sorry, Dad. We've broken new ground in a couple of different ways here, and that's one that I don't think we've ever had. Is, you know, we've had a lot of people, Kristen being one of whom, who's been, you know, surrounded by teachers, and we'll get your thoughts on that here in just a second. But it's a rather unusual, at least for our induction classes, to come in and have somebody who was very close to them but basically say, maybe you should try something else, or maybe you should stay out of this field altogether. Mm-hmm. But to have your dad become a teacher, what was that like for you, especially given
the guidance
you got earlier?
He was a firefighter, and he was avid. When he retired, he was an assistant chief in the town of Palm Beach. He started the union there. I mean, he was a go-getter. He wanted me to earn money, and he knew as a teacher I would not earn a great deal of money. And, you know, that comes up too. We don't teach for the money. Well, we do have to live, so we do need some money. But he then, when he retired as a firefighter, he started teaching at the at the local then community college, which is now Palm Beach State College, and he started the fire academy there. And so he ran the fire academy and also taught courses. He got a 4-year fire science program put together. It started as a 2-year associate's degree, but then when Palm Beach Community College became Palm Beach State College, they added some 4-year programs, and he made one of those fire science, so that people could graduate with a degree and not just be a firefighter, which takes enough schooling as it is, sure. But they could have that degree with them so they could advance more easily. So it was, I don't know what the word would be. Help me out, Monica. Verified. That's not the word I want, though. What is it?
Validated.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, it validated me with him, and he never did come back and say, now I get it, you know, but that's fine.
But you know he did.
Yes, mm-hmm. I know he did.
Obviously, yes.
Yes, and he did not like that humbling feeling, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's listening up there right now, too.
All right, Karen, what got you involved in teaching? What led you to be a teacher, and what was your aha moment that this was your calling?
Well, actually, I wanted to be Wonder Woman. That didn't work out.
Yep.
But I can remember from a very early age taking my sister, who is also an English and drama teacher, an amazing one at that, and then later turned out teaching at Disney University in Orlando as her dream, taking her Spanish books. And teaching from the books, even though I did not speak a word of Spanish, and probably butchered the language. Would teach my dolls. And then later on, I actually decided I wanted to go into your career.
Into broadcasting.
Yep,
really?
Into broadcasting, radio and television broadcasting, thanks to a very special teacher, Don Carrick, in my high school. Had an amazing experience with him. And I decided I was going to be a broadcast journalist. my sophomore year of college, I was taking a ballroom dance class, and somebody ran in to share that the Space Shuttle Challenger had just exploded. Mm. And I ran back, everybody dispersed, I ran back to my sorority house and watched with everybody the horror of what had just happened. And, of course, on that shuttle was Krista McAuliffe.
Yep.
The thing that struck me about that moment is that the news media kept focusing on the families, and in particular Krista's family, and their reaction when the shuttle exploded. And I knew at that moment I could not do that. I came home and I sat down with my mom and dad and said, I'm changing my major. I'm changing it to education. And the first thing my dad said, much like Becky, you know you're not going to make a lot of money doing that. And I said, well, yeah, I do understand that. And he looked at me very seriously. He said, really, you work to earn enough money to pay your bills. Everything else is gravy. He said, you're going to be doing something for 30 years or more of your life. The most important thing for you to do is to be happy. And so if you can be happy in this career, then I fully support your decision to change. And that was really all I needed. And so I went and changed my major to education and got into my first classroom, and that was it. It was love from that moment on. And I feel so passionate about education and passionate about the experiences that we provide for our students, and that light bulb moment that they have. And then even better than any other award that you can possibly get is when they reach out years later and tell you how you impacted their life.
So true.
That is the top of anything that we could possibly ever receive. And I'm getting teary-eyed right now. In fact, I had a student reach out to me yesterday who hadn't known I was here getting this honor, who shared with me she was no longer afraid of reptiles because of some class that I had taught to her back in 2019. Or not 2009. No, 1999. Holy cow, I'm old. Yeah, I feel so old. It's those moments. It's those moments that keep me going. And ended year 34, starting 35 this year. So
amazing. I want to take our final break. I want to come back here for both Eric and for Kristen to get their thoughts here on what got them to be teachers, their aha moments. And then I want to finish out our program here today about the topic that we've already addressed, at least in part here, about being ambassadors for education. So our talk of Emporia, getting into our final segment here with the National Teachers Hall of Fame class of 2023. Karen Long of Mont Verde, Florida, Eric Hook of Miami, Florida, Kristen Record of Stratford, Connecticut, Monica Washington, Texarkana, Texas, and Rebecca Hamilton, Riviera Beach, Florida. Final segment of Talk of Emporia coming up here in just a second. Talk of Emporia brought to you by Bobby D's Merchant Street Barbecue. Enjoy dining inside or the convenience of carryout. Bobby D's, 607 Merchant, where it's all about to meet.
Is your community group, sports team, youth group, or PTO looking to do a fundraiser this summer? If so, let Bobby D's Merchant Street Barbecue help raise funds for you. Sign up to take part in their Donate While You Dine program, and it'll raise funds for your organization while people dine at Bobby D's. To learn more about how Bobby D's can help raise funds for your organization, call them at 342-1990. It's the Donate While You Dine program at Bobby D's Merchant Street Barbecue.
Your morning big gulp of information. Ron Thomas, Chuck Samples, and Greg Ray. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, live and local.
Good morning.
You're listening to the Talk of Emporia. Your questions are welcome. Call the KVOE Sutherland Studio Line, 620-342-5863. That's 342-KVOE.
11:48 on KVOE and KVOE.com. Our final segment of really a highlight of our calendar here at KVOE, the class of Hall of Fame inductees, National Teachers Hall of Fame inductees, joining us here on the Talk of Emporia here today. And we will be kind of, as standard, getting really close to noon before we wrap up our program here today. Wanted to bring Eric Hook of Miami, Florida, and we were talking in our second segment about what led you to be teachers and really the aha moment where you realized that education was you know, not maybe just an interest, but your calling. So, Eric, what was it that got you into teaching, and when did you find that aha moment that said, this is where I need to be?
Well, I actually was not going to go into teaching. My dad was a doctor, and that's what they had decided for me. I was going to be a doctor. Got accepted to med school and dental school. And then he realized that that probably was not going to be for me. But when did I start teaching? I think I started teaching in college. I was in a fraternity, and we took chemistry classes, and I would always say, why do they make it so difficult when it can be so simple? Mm-hmm. And every day, whenever we had chemistry classes, our student, my friends, my brothers would come and say, okay, Eric, translate, please. And I would have my own lessons in the fraternity house, how we had to do chemistry. And I enjoyed it, but I didn't think this was going to be my career. I was supposed to be a doctor or a dentist. I finished, and I decided that I was going to take a leap year. They gave me an extension. They said that you can get accepted to the med school that you were after a year if you decided to come back. Well, that year that I was gone from going into med school or dental school, I actually worked with the dentist, and I worked in a hospital. And then I realized that this was not going to be for me. At least I didn't think so. So in Miami, Florida, they were giving a big raise to teachers. So it was all over the news. And I said, you know what? Since I'm not sure, let's just give it a try. Well, I was hooked.
Very cool. See what you did there.
I was hooked. I mean, I realized how much fun it was. I always loved science, but now I actually got people to love science. And to me, if science is taught correctly, it should be everyone's favorite subject. So not true. Offending the English teachers.
So true. But, same I mean, for
English. Every kid loves the whatever. Curiosity. Whatever. They want to be working in groups. This is what they're curious. So I said, I'm going to get all my students to love science and get into it. And I'm proud to say that a lot of my students actually have gone on to become teachers, science teachers, or study chemistry or engineering. And they tell me, I loved your class. Because of you, I'm going to be this. So that, I said, it was amazing for me. And I'm so happy. I know I was supposed to be a doctor, but I know I was meant to be a teacher.
Well said.
And you know that saying that you said, those that can do, those that can't, you know? Well, to me, it's that those that can do, those that can do more. Teach. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Yes. Like
so
that.
There we go.
Well I like that. Yes. I like that.
So, I mean, it's been 34 years at the same, I just finished my 35th year at the same school. Had many opportunities to go different places, but the kids is what keeps me there in the classroom. I'm sure all of us here have had opportunities to go to the district and do different things, but my kids every day, and as much as I teach them, they're teaching me. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I thought, I'm still learning, and they teach you. They keep you humble. Yes.
Kristen, I have to ask, one, because it seems like you were most imbued with education growing up this induction class, whether you had really any question about whether education was your field, and then once you got in, what was your aha moment that said, yep, this is where I need to be?
So I grew up in a family of educators. To add to my already established geekiness, my father was a high school physics teacher for over 40 years. My mom started off as an elementary teacher and then later was a middle school math and science teacher, public school for over 30 years. I am a high school physics teacher, and my younger brother is a high school physics teacher. So, can you only imagine what family dinners are like there? So, I grew up knowing that teaching was a really great job to have. I had two parents that loved their work, loved their job, loved their kids. Everything that they had always said about teaching was that it's a great profession, and it's a great profession to build a family around, and it's a great profession that's in the service to community. So the fact that teaching was something that you could do in the service of others was also something that was strongly a part of my upbringing. And so when I went to college, I was a physics major. I was the only woman physics major in my class. In the entire university, over the span of the years that I was there, at any given time, there was only two female physics majors. So that was quite a challenge, and something that, you know, it's something that I can relate to my students currently feeling, you know, marginalized in an AP physics class, for example. But I was really fortunate in that I had a female professor who was very well respected. She was my undergraduate thesis advisor, and she mentored me a lot and got me involved in doing undergraduate research, which was a novelty back in the 90s that an undergrad could do publishable research in a lab that was grant-funded. But she had grant-funded research, and she got me involved in it when I was a sophomore in college. And so I loved doing research, and I was good at it, and I was also the only person who would actively volunteer to sit in the labs on Saturday mornings and Sunday afternoons when the tour groups came through, because I loved talking to people about what it was that we were doing and the cool things that we were doing and explaining all that stuff. I was a very popular calculus tutor on campus. And so that all kind of came together. I essentially had a dual major in physics and secondary education, but at the same time, within the various faculty in the science departments, there was a lot of pushback to the fact that I wanted to go to grad school for education and to be a high school teacher. I was overtly told by, ironically, some chemistry professors that I was wasting my time and talents as a physicist, that I was wasting the mentoring that Dr. Hagel was putting into me, that I should be going to grad school for a PhD in physics or electrical engineering. And so that was a hard thing to wrestle with as a young adult and trying to find myself and find my own footing, because, you know, of course, growing up in the family that I grew up in, you have that identity crisis of, am I wanting to become a teacher because I really want to become a teacher, or am I doing it to please my parents? And for that, I love physics. I do enjoy doing research. And I don't know, maybe there is some truth to what these other professors are saying, but no. And so, you know, all of that struggle was there. And actually, one time I got to an argument with, it was one summer that I was on campus doing research towards the end of college. And it kind of ended by me saying to him, look, like, honestly, you're lucky you have a job. The only reason you have a job is because of people like me. People don't come to university and sit in your gen chem class and decide that they want to become chem majors. Like, nobody does that. They want to come to college and be chem majors or physics majors because they had an amazing experience somewhere in middle school or high school or elementary school that sparked their interest in science. And you only have chem majors at this university that sit in your class because someone like me wanted to teach them when they were younger kids. Like, you should be supporting me, not trying to discourage me. And that, for me, I think was like that moment where I was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. And ever since then, anytime I've had the chance to teach, whether it was formally or informally, as Eric said, like that spark of like getting kids to understand something, or teaching physics, of course, there's always that, oh my God, this is impossible, I'll never understand this, I hate physics, I hate science, it's going to be hard. But like, to get kids to like feel that they can do it, that they can be a scientist, that they belong in a physics class. I've had many, many students go on to be physics majors, engineers, have all kinds of science-based careers. But I've equally had kids come back and tell me, that are English majors or dance majors are like, I had to take a science class. Did you ever think that I would be the smartest kid? Like, in my, if I had to take physics, like, I taught the other, I used the notes from your class and I tutored my friends to get through fit. Like, did you ever think that would be? I'm like, yes, actually I did, because you were a good student. You belonged in my class. Like, and I'm so proud of you for embracing whatever it is that you want to love and do with your life. And I'm super proud of you that you stuck through something that was hard, which was learning physics, and you feel good about it now in retrospect. So that for me is what keeps me going. As Eric said, the kids keep me in the classroom. I have had many opportunities to pursue other career paths in education, but the kids keep me in the classroom, and that's where I want to be. And so, you know, I just finished 23 years of teaching, and I'm being inducted into the National Teachers Hall of Fame, and this is not the end of my career. Like, my students were like, wait, so you're not going to come back next year? I'm like, of course I'm coming back, you know? So, it's like, so for me, it's, so what's next? What's going to be the next thing, and what do I have left to do with my teaching career?
I hate to do this, but we are really up on the top of the hour here, and I do I know we've talked a little bit about being ambassadors for education, so I'm going to limit this question to one person, only because we're out of time, and I would much rather we had a little bit more time to loop over. But Rebecca, considering you're the person with the most time in the classroom, I wasn't going there. but what does
it's
it mean?
What
does it mean for you to be an ambassador for education? Really, with this announcement, and even before, leading up to this.
I think I feel a lot like Kristen, starting in the classroom. Mm-hmm. That's where you have to be an ambassador first. If you are not all the way invested in education, you can't be a great teacher. And I think getting my PhD for me was showing myself, my students, that I'm all the way in education. Mm-hmm. That to me was the pinnacle. I will not sit in a formal classroom ever again, but I do a lot of my own education. I do things that edify my life, and I share that with my students. I still do workshops. I still, you know, I participate in professional development and things like that, and I make sure my students know that I am a lifelong learner, and that's what I want them to be as well. So I think it starts there. But I was thinking, as you were asking the other questions, another place is just in public. If I have a Suncoast t-shirt on, that's the name of my school, at the grocery store, oh, you teach at Suncoast, and some are so supportive, and others say, how can you teach in that neighborhood? Because it's a dangerous neighborhood. When we have a code red, it's not the school. It's something going on in the neighborhood that's a little scary. But I feel like our school is an oasis, because the people in the neighborhood have such great respect for our school that I firmly believe they would never do anything to bring any harm to those students or to make us feel fearful. So that makes me feel good. But then even at the hairdresser, somebody, oh, how can you teach at a school like that? And I said, what, one of the top schools in the nation? I don't know what you mean. And of course I know what they mean, but I won't even address that, because it's a non-starter, right? Mm-hmm. The school is the school. It's a great school. But otherwise, people will ask me what I teach if I'm out on vacation or somewhere else, and I'll tell them. And I know, just as you have heard all of us, I get an excitement in my voice because I love what I teach. I teach research. And when Kristen was talking about research, I was like, yes, yes, that's the best. The kids get to research what they want. I don't tell them what to think and how to believe and things like that, because I teach them the skills to be able to figure out how to think and what they believe, so that they can go on then and be lifelong learners as well, formally or informally, however they choose to do it. But I just think it's important as a teacher to love education. And I can't quote this, but somebody said it's not education that changes the world, it's people that change the world. But if those people are not educated, then what kind of change are we going to have, right? And three of us being from Florida, some of the changes that are taking place are not good changes. And I noticed you stayed away from the political questions. I'm very grateful for that.
Understood.
Well, I was ready for it.
I tell you what, let's break here. Let's close down our program here. But again, we encourage you to learn more about the Teachers Hall of Fame inductees, the class of 2023, the trivia nights tonight, Lyon County History Center, the band concerts tomorrow, the root beer floats will be served first 200 at 7 o'clock, the concert at 8, and then you still have time to get into the induction ceremonies, which are taking place Friday at the Memorial Union Webb Hall. And don't forget, too, that we will be broadcasting the rededication of the Memorial to Fallen Educators 10 a.m. Friday on KVUE and also KVUE.com. Thank you to everybody.
Thank you very much for your time
with us and also the work that you do with our kids and our future. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
All right, our panel here today, the 2023 class of National Teachers Hall of Fame inductees, Eric Hook of Miami, Florida, Monica Washington, Texarkana, Texas, Rebecca Hamilton, Riviera Beach, Florida, Karen Long, Montverde, Florida, Kristen Record, Stratford, Connecticut. 1204 on KVUE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, and KVUE.com. All the information you need, live and local.
96.9 FM, K245B.